So if you would, please open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. I was with you a couple of months ago, and I brought you a message from the beginning of the book of Ecclesiastes. I entitled it A Divine Message from King Solomon. Well, as a college group, we actually just finished this past week, not last night, but the week before, working our way through the book of Ecclesiastes, and it was a great joy to walk through this book together. And so I'm going to bring you a message tonight. It's actually the second to last message in the book, but I think it's very pertinent for you. I think it'll be very helpful for you. Let me remind you, because I know it's been a while and you have slept since the last time I was with you, let me remind you of the theme of Ecclesiastes, and that is, enjoy this difficult, vain life with every ounce of your being, but do it God's way. Enjoy this vain, trivial, difficult life with every ounce of your being, but do it God's way. That's going to be helpful for you to remember as we work through this text. I'm going to read our text and then we will unpack it together. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, beginning in verse 7. The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them. Before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened, and clouds return after the rain. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through windows grow dim. And the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all of the daughters of song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags himself along, and the caperberry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home, while mourners go about in the street. Remember him before the silver cord is broken, and the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. When I think of youth, many things come to my mind. Things such as little youth, children, big youth, teenagers, youth sports, little league, hitting that first home run, baseball under the lights, playing or hanging out with friends, having some but little responsibility, dreaming big, living for the summer and for school breaks. I think of immature decisions. I think of summer nights out and about. I think of hard discussions with parents. I think of that first crush and the heartbreak that comes with it. I think of camping and actually enjoying it. I think of fighting with siblings, fights that resulted in being thrown through the glass doors of the foyer at church or down the stairs or into an armoire. I think of bloody noses and bloody faces and bloody knees, electric shock, broken bones, BB gun wars, dyed hair, speeding tickets, Friday night football games, being at church whenever the doors were open, cutting class. Never do this, but I used to have a habit in high school that involved me writing my own excused notes to the office, and I would sign them with my own name. It was perfectly honest. I just said, please excuse Brandon's tardiness or his absence. Sign, Brandon Ragsdale. It took them a few months to catch on, and when they did, I did pay pretty heavily in detention. I do think they framed my notes and put them in the office. I think of emotional roller coasters that you go through. I think of making curfew after a date. I think of having a surface outlook on life. And I think of having very few worries, as it were. And as Solomon begins his final conclusion, it's as if he turns to youth, which is emphasized throughout these verses, as you heard me read, and says to those youth, listen to me. Heed my words. Learn from my mistakes. Take advantage of your youth and make wise, eternal decisions that will affect you positively for the rest of your lives. Don't wait until you are old and gray to take God and His word seriously. Start today. Live life to the glory of God and enjoy it fully today. Well, in our text this evening, I want you to simply note two simple commands that emphasize the importance for us to live life God's way. Two simple commands that emphasize the importance for us to live life God's way. And the first command that we find is in verses 7 through 10 of chapter 11, and it is this. Number one, rejoice in the life that God has given you. Rejoice in the life that God has given you. These are familiar words that Solomon has said over and over again in this book. In fact, that is what encapsulates the theme of the book. To rejoice in this life that God has given you with every ounce of your being. These are words that generate the right kind of questions for us to ask. Questions that lead us to the right kinds of conclusions. Conclusions such as worrying your life away that you have now isn't worth it. Conclusions that say living with the mentality that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence is worthless and unhelpful. Conclusions that say the life that you are living right now is the life that God has providentially given you in His kindness and in His goodness for His glory and for His purposes and for your good. Familiar words. Well, as you look down at verse 7, Solomon reminds us that living life on this earth is intended to be both pleasant and good. As he says, the light is pleasant and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. These words here in verse 7 are parallel statements that reiterate the gift from God that life on this earth is intended to be. We are to enjoy this life as a gift. The analogy in verse 7 is clear, isn't it? It says, the light is pleasant and is good for the eyes to see. You, like me, have been through a lot of gloomy days in your life. And I mean, not necessarily in your emotional state, but outside, like today. Gloomy, rainy, no sun to be seen right now. And if you have enough of those gloomy days, if you're like me, you become pretty discouraged with that. I like the sun. I like the vitamin D that I get from the sun. I could never live in a place like Seattle. They don't see the sun very much up there. I don't know how people survive in that place. But he's talking about how after this number of gloomy days, how awesome it is to see the sun. The light is pleasant to the eyes. It's also helpful, and it's also pleasant to turn the light on in a dark room so that you don't step on all those little army guys or Legos and have them go through your foot and cause you to bleed out. Light is pleasant to the eyes. It is good. It's good to see. It is both pleasant and good, Solomon says. Well, he goes on through the remainder of chapter 11 to give us one reason why we are to enjoy life, as well as two practical exhortations regarding one of the ways that we can work to enjoy this life. I want you to notice, first of all, Solomon's reason there in verse 8, which is, enjoy your life because your days are numbered. Enjoy your life because your days are numbered. Verse 8 begins with Solomon saying, indeed. Indeed. This is a word that is showing us that he's transitioning into the first part of his conclusion of the book. Note the inferred time reference there in verse 8 as Solomon states, if a man should live many years. He's referring to time. He's saying man's days are numbered in years upon this earth. They are not forever here, he's telling us. For some, their years are many. For others, their years are few. And so Solomon says that people are to rejoice in all the days that they have, whether they are many or whether they are few. The type of verb used in this verse is interesting. It's a command. Rejoice in this verse is a command, but it's connected to the idea of an obligation. We are obligated to rejoice, Solomon says. Why? Because God has given us many years on this earth to live as a gift. The life that you have is a gift. And friends, you are obligated to rejoice in it because it is a gift from God, from your Father. And to rejoice is to be understood as an obligation and not an option. Too often we attempt to reason away rejoicing for various reasons and circumstances, and we're good at that because life happens to us. Life can become very difficult. Relationships can begin to struggle. We can begin to encounter difficulty at school and in our relationships with our parents and our relationships with our friends and our siblings. And so we often try to cause rejoicing to go away. We treat it as an option. And what Solomon is saying very clearly in this verse is that to rejoice in this life is not an option. It is an obligation. We are also to rejoice, he tells us, remembering the fact that we will not be able to do so forever. Look at the second half of verse 8. It says, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. The verb remember is in the same form as the verb rejoice, again showing us that it is a command with a sense of obligation. What are we to remember, Solomon? Well, he says that we are to remember the days of darkness. Why? For they will be many. The days of darkness here in this text, they refer to old age. They refer to suffering. They refer to the dying process. We are to rejoice in the days and moments we have now because one day our bodies will start to shut down and we will know nothing except being old, suffering, and beginning to experience death. A couple of weeks ago, my great aunt Shirley passed away. She lived a full life. She was in her 90s. I didn't know Aunt Shirley well, but I did know her for this reason, is that every year she would send me $10 on my birthday. But not just me. She sent all of my siblings that, all of our spouses that, and all of her great nieces and nephews that. My kids probably never met her. She lived in a different part of the country, and so we didn't see her. But she was very kind. She loved the Lord. I believe she's in heaven, and she lived a full life. But when she got to her old age, things began to deteriorate. And I got a picture from my mom of her leg, and it was black because she fell. And when you're old and your blood is not working as it's supposed to, it turns black in your body when it bruises, and it was awful. Actually, the last picture that I got was her and my grandma laying beside each other in this bed as my grandma was holding her hand with her when she died. And it just reminds me of what Solomon is saying here. It reminds me of the fact that he says that we need to remember, we need to rejoice in the life that we have on this earth, because the days that we have are numbered, and the days that we begin to experience suffering and death, they will be many. You see, the fact of the matter is everything Solomon says, referring to life on this earth, is futility. He says at the end of verse 8, it is temporary. It will come to an end, he tells us. We are to remember because of the finality of death. I know it's hard to grasp this reality now, but one day, all of the moments of your life will be over. Friends, it's good once in a while to contemplate a biblical theology of death, because it helps you to understand the reality of life that God has given you on this planet as a gift. And it helps you to understand how awful sin is, because it leads to death. And it helps you understand how awesome and how magnificent God's grace is, because it saves you from this horrible, horrible thing that death is. And the truth of the matter is, these moments of your life will be over much more quickly than you think. A number of years ago, I like commercials. I like good commercials, funny commercials. Right now I'm into the Geico commercials. They really bring a lot of joy into my life. But a number of years ago, there was another insurance company who had this commercial. And the commercial goes like this. You have a guy in his house, his wife's vacuuming, and this guy is standing by the wall, and there's this light switch, and he just keeps flipping it up and down. He's like, honey, you know, he's yelling because she's vacuuming, what does this switch do? She's like, I don't know, we didn't know when we bought the house. He just keeps flipping it. The next scene of the commercial transitions to this super old lady in her car underneath her garage door, and the garage door is going up and down and crushing her into the ground, because the light switch was doing that. And then it flashes, life comes at you fast, right? Life comes at you fast. That's a true reality. Life comes at you fast. Before you know it, you guys will be moving on. You'll be graduated. You'll be going to college. You'll be starting your lives. You'll be getting married. You'll be having families. Yes, that happens. Don't be scared of that. It's a good thing. It's a helpful thing. I'm known as putting people together in college, so come see me. We'll make it happen. But it's going to happen. Your lives are going to continue to move in that direction, and all of a sudden, you're going to look back like me, and now I have a daughter who's going to graduate high school this year. I'm too young to have a daughter who's going to graduate high school, but the fact of the matter is it's going to happen. Why? Because life comes at us fast. These moments of your life are one day going to be over. Then as you get older, it seems to go by even faster. Your days are numbered. Therefore, enjoy the gift of life that God has given you today by pleasing Him and by living for His glory and by enjoying all of the blessings that He has given to you that are in your possession. Allow the trials and the problems of this life to serve as a backdrop to highlight the sweet and wonderful joys that you get to experience and give thanks. Solomon moves on from the reason there in verse 8 to two practical exhortations. Verses 9 and 10, the first one is to enjoy your life, but remember God is your judge. Enjoy your life, but remember God is your judge. There at the beginning of verse 9, you have the command to rejoice again. That is to be glad, to take delight in. And it's in the form of a parallelism. As he says, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. He's saying the same thing, repeating it twice for emphasis. The idea of a young man here is typically refers to one who is fully grown, who's a vigorous, unmarried man. The lingo that we would use in our day is one who is in the prime of their life. All of the body parts are functioning properly and at a high level, and you are in the best shape of your life. Now, there's a reason why Solomon directs this wisdom to young people. See, when you're young, it's easier to develop patterns and habits in your life and to put things to memory. You are functioning right now at full capacity, able to process things, able to make those habits a part of your life. There's a saying that says you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It is difficult as you get older to memorize like you used to remember things at times. But right now, you're in the prime of your life. And so Solomon says, rejoice, young man, during your childhood. Let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. It is at this point in your life as a youth, as a young person, that you need to hammer down a couple of things in your life. First of all, this is where you need to learn not to become distracted by the corruption of this world and that you were made to live life to the fullest. Friends, there are a lot of things right now happening in our world, in our culture, in your lives, that are distracting you from living life as God intended you to live it. There's a lot of nonsense happening in our world right now, all around our world, particularly in our country. And if you allow yourself to be overcome by that, to become worried about your future and all of the things that go along with the nonsense that is happening in our culture, then it will distract you from living the life that God intends you to live right now. You need to learn right now that life is going to happen. And one of the main things you need to understand about the book of Ecclesiastes is that you're living life and you're enjoying life, but you're doing it in a fallen world, in a corrupt world, in a world that is totally 100% tainted by sin. And so it's not always going to look good. It's not always going to be easy. It's going to be difficult. And things around you are going to fall apart. And the world around you is going to continue to crumble because that's what happens when sin takes over. But you can't become distracted by it. You have to set your sights on Christ. You have to set your mind on things above, as Colossians 3 tells you to do so. You have to be focused on living life to the glory of God and pleasing Him and enjoying this life that He has given to you. But not only do you need to get that down in your life to not become distracted by the corruption, but you also need to hammer down a biblical theology of life in this world as early as possible. You need to focus on learning all you can learn at this point in your life about who God is. You need to focus on learning all you can learn in this life about Christ and his sacrifice on the cross and the implications of that reality in your life. You need to learn all that you can learn right now about what it means to truly trust the Bible and to understand that it is infallible, that it is inspired, and that it is inerrant, and that it is sufficient. You need to learn all that you can learn now about how to view this life through biblically filtered lenses. You need to learn how to do that. You need to learn what God says about sin, what God says about friendship, what God says about relationships, what God says about how you are to act in this ungodly, corrupt world. You need to hammer down a biblical theology of life now. Solomon directs this to young people. But notice he goes on to command enjoyment, but don't miss the caveat that stands out like an elephant in the room as you look at verse 9, as he says, "And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes, yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things." This is not a command to reckless living, as some think that he's just spewing off stuff from his life right now. This is not a command to reckless living, but rather this is a call to enjoy life with a very particular and a very direct warning. God will bring you to judgment, Solomon says. This judgment that he is speaking of is eschatological, referring to both the judgment seat of Christ, which believers will stand before, and the great white throne judgment, which unbelievers will stand before. The judgment seat of Christ will be for all of those whom Christ has paid for on the cross, and there they will be judged for their works, and they will either receive rewards or they will have rewards withheld from them in this life. Their works will be evaluated. The great white throne judgment, however, is not a place you want to find yourself, because if you find yourself at the great white throne judgment, you have rejected Christ, you have rejected the gospel, and now you are going to be judged by the living God according to your works. And we know what Isaiah says about that. He says, all of your works are as filthy rags. And every one of your works are jotted down in a book, and you will be judged according to those works, and you will be found deficient. And you will be cast from the presence of God for all of eternity because you rejected the gift of his Son. You don't want to find yourself at that judgment. Notice Solomon says that you will be brought into judgment for all these things, he says. Everything you do matters. Every thought, every word, every action, every motive. God has given us his word to know and understand that which is good and acceptable before him. And so you are to conduct your life in that way. Friends, enjoying life never includes that which God condemns in his word. Enjoying life never includes that which God condemns in his word. If you are enjoying life right now, but it is a sinful life, you are not truly enjoying life. It's not the joy that he's talking about. And understand that God's judgment is inevitable. And it will be perfectly just. Notice a second exhortation in verse 10, which also is functioning as a response to the end of verse 9, where he says, enjoy life by taking care of yourself, there in verse 10. So, if you're looking at your text, so in verse 10, Solomon says, that is to say, in light of the fact that your days are numbered and that God will judge you, this is what you need to do to enjoy the life that God has given you now. He says, to remove grief and anger from your heart. That is to say, don't spend your life living in bitterness and anger over all that is bad in your life and in the world. Remember, you live in a fallen world. Therefore, difficulties, frustrations, and trials are inevitable. Don't waste your life, especially your youth, sulking in bitterness and anger. And he continues on by saying, put away pain from your body. He is simply saying that you need to do your best to take care of your physical and emotional health because your youth will only last for a short while. He's telling us to get enough of the proper nutrition, to get enough sleep, to get enough exercise. These things are connected to your emotional state, which affects your spiritual health as well. You know, there are times when a person comes in for counseling who has a lot of issues going on in their life, and the one thing they need to do before we talk about anything else any further is they need to go eat something and they need to go to bed. And after you get a full night's sleep, a great rest, you come back and let's talk. And maybe your parents have told you that before. We're not having this discussion tonight. You go to bed, we'll have this in the morning when you're thinking rationally. Why is that? Because our emotional health is very much connected to our spiritual state. God has given us our bodies to take care of. He made us as a whole person. Therefore, the different parts of our person, the physical, the emotional, the mental, and the spiritual, they are all intertwined and they do affect one another. And in order to enjoy life as God intended you to, you must take care of the body that he has given to you. Because your youth and the prime of your life will only last a short while. One commentator said it like this. He said, youth and dark hair are but a breath. Now, there are some here in your group who know that firsthand. I won't mention any names, but you can look around and find those without hair or with discolored hair. That's what happens when you get older. Friends, remember who is giving you this wisdom. It's Solomon. This is the one who squandered away his youth in so many ways. And he is screaming to us here, learn from me, learn from my mistakes. Don't make the same ones that I made. Enjoy the life that God has given you on this earth by learning these lessons now while you are young. Well, this leads to a second command that emphasizes the importance for us to live life God's way in verses 1 through 7 of chapter 12, and that is this. Remember God while you are able. Remember God while you are able. Here in these verses, Solomon gives a command, and then he gives a poetic analogy which serves to drive his point home. And notice, first of all, the command there in verse 1. Remember. Remember, Solomon says. This is an imperative, which means, which has a meaning that goes beyond simply recalling something to one's mind, like the intellectual remembering of something like you do for a test or a quiz. Certainly we remember for those kinds of things, but this word goes beyond that. This word in respect to God, who is the object of this command, means to ponder God and his commands and to act decisively concerning the knowledge or information that you learn about God. This word, remember, in verse 1, is a call to obedience to God and to his word. This is not a mere intellectual recollection of God. Now, this command is a call to action that is one of utmost importance. What you do with what God has commanded you to do concerning himself matters eternally. This is a command, first and foremost, to come to God on his terms. this is Solomon at the end of this glorious book where he calls us to enjoy life in this difficult, tiresome, troublesome, temporary world. And he gets to the end and it reminds us that if we're going to enjoy this life properly, we have to do it God's way. And so he calls out in verse 1 and he says, remember also your Creator. This is a call first and foremost of salvation, to come to God on his terms. But he says, remember also. This word connects us to the command that he gave us in verse 9 to rejoice in our youth. Once again reminding us that true joy cannot exist without a relationship with God. Don't let that point fall off. Don't let that just go in one ear and out the other. We have a lot of different understandings of what it means to enjoy something in this world. And almost everything outside of a biblical exposition tells you to enjoy things that you ought not to enjoy. And it gives you a definition of enjoying something that is not a biblical definition. It's not a helpful definition. If you are going to truly enjoy this life, then you have to have a relationship with God for that to happen. If you are disconnected from God, if you have rejected Jesus Christ and his command to repent and believe in the gospel, then you will never know true joy. You will never be able to enjoy this life as the gift that God has given to you on this planet. True joy exists only when there is a relationship with God. So if you are trying to enjoy life outside of that relationship, if you are trying to enjoy life in some ways that God does not commend in his word, then you are never going to enjoy life the way that God intends for you to enjoy it. And it's going to end in absolute misery and destruction. We see clearly as Solomon next reveals the who that we are to remember. He says, remember your Creator. Creator, this is a term that certainly fits in the context of Ecclesiastes, and that reminds us of where Solomon began in chapter 1, describing for us the natural cycles of creation. And that it is the Creator God alone who has the control over those cycles of creation. And so here in chapter 12, he comes full circle to bring that title for God before our eyes once again. What is implied by God's title of Creator? Well, besides the fact that this term expresses his majesty and his superiority, there are four things that I want to point out briefly that are implied by God's title of Creator. First of all, it's the fact that he is the one who made us. You did not come from some evolutionary process. You did not just come into existence. You are a direct creation of God. He is your Creator. Therefore, number two, he is the one who has the right to rule you and me. Because he is your Creator, he has the right to rule over you. But not only that, he is the one who sustains our lives. The very fact that you are sitting here in this moment and breathing this air and able to sit there and survive is because God is causing this world to be sustained by the word of his power. And the fourth thing you need to understand about this title of God as the Creator is that he is the eternal judge. Because he created us, has the right to rule us, he sustains us, he also has the right to judge us, and he will judge us. Well, when is it that Solomon commands one to remember his Creator? Look at the text. He says, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. Again, don't don't miss the importance of nailing down your commitment to Christ now. Over and over in this text, he says, remember youth, in your youth. As a young person, don't miss the importance of nailing down your commitment to Christ, your convictions based on his word, and your commitment to follow him wherever he leads. Do it now. Well, Solomon goes on in the rest of verses 1 through 7 to argue why it is crucial to remember God is God in one's youth. And those reasons are ultimately connected to the reality of death that comes upon everyone. You are first of all to remember God before death comes and knocks at your door. And we see that in the first 6 verses of chapter 12. See, the end of verse 1 declares to us that death is coming. As he says, evil days come and the years draw near. One day death will call your number. Statistically speaking, this will happen when you are 70 or older. But no one knows except God. And the reality is your days are numbered, so you need to remember God now. Today, this moment. Verse 2 continues on in this vein, explaining to us that death will be sudden when it happens. Just as the lights in our solar system become dark suddenly each day, and the clouds form, spew out rain, and form again. And even when death is expected, the moment it happens is still sudden. Our minds certainly go to those we know who have died suddenly and unexpectedly when we hear this. Those are difficult days when we lose a loved one, when we get that phone call that this person passed away unexpectedly in the night. Death is unexpected. It doesn't ring a bell and say this is when it's going to happen. And not only is death coming and it will be sudden, but there is also a dying process that our bodies typically go through. And that is what Solomon describes in verses 3 through 6 in our text. And though there have been a number of interpretations of this portion of Scripture, the one that seems to best fit the context is that Solomon is using a poetic analogy consisting of a bunch of metaphors about the decaying process of an unprotected house to picture the progressive decay that is coming upon the members of the body. In other words, this is a poetic analogy about how the body deteriorates over time. I'm glad I could be so encouraging you tonight. But we're going to read this. We're going to look at this really quickly. I'm just going to lay out these pictures for you, because those who have agreed upon this interpretation have given what they believe each of the pieces of decay are referring to in the human body, which I think is helpful to picture here as Solomon lays these out. So look at verse 3. As it says, first of all, that the watchmen of the house tremble. This pictures the arms and hands begin to tremble when a person begins the dying process. And then it says the mighty men stoop. That is, the legs and the knees and the shoulders begin to weaken as a person gets older. It says, grinding ones stand idle. That is, a person starts to lose their teeth. They start to become ineffective in their mouth. Those who look through windows grow dim. They start to lose their vision. The doors on the street are shut, and the sound of the grinding mill is low. Those are people who start to lose their hearing. It says, one will arise at the sound of the bird, waking up earlier and earlier, though you want to sleep longer. I guess that happens as a person gets older. I really dread that day. I do not like when that happens. I don't like when I get up at 4 and have no reason to be up. Daughters of the song sing softly, speaking of the voice begins to weaken. Afraid of high places and terrors on the road, this is people become terrified of falling. Almond trees blossom, hair turns white. Grasshopper drags himself along. You begin to drag yourself along. Your body parts stop working properly. The caper berry is ineffective. You begin to lose your appetites that you have in this life. And then he says, a man goes to his eternal home. You die. Mourners go about the streets. People mourn your death. They go to your funeral. Look at verse 6. He says, remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed and the pitcher by the well is shattered and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Notice all of those parallel words. They all speak of total destruction, reminding us that death is inevitable and it is no respecter of persons. And Solomon says to us very clearly in this text, remember God before this happens. Remember God before it's too late. You are not guaranteed tomorrow. Well, verse 7 then reminds us to remember God before you meet him as judge. You notice how that keeps coming back around in this text? You notice the theme? Rejoice and remember, young person, because God is your judge, because God is your judge, because God is your judge. It's like it's one of those things, it's like an echo. And this is a fitting place to close, isn't it? Now, I mentioned just a moment ago that one day you will stand before the judge. And so it matters how you live. Your spirit, which will live forever, is returning to God, verse 7 says, who gave it when your life on this earth comes to an end. And at that moment, at the moment your spirit returns to God, one of two things is going to happen in that moment. You are either going to be welcomed into the presence of God and await your new body and life in the new heavens and the new earth, or you are going to be rejected from God's presence and you are going to await your final sentencing at the great white throne judgment where you will be cast into the lake of fire to suffer under God's judgment for all of eternity. Those are the only two things that are going to happen the moment you die. Those are the only two options. There's not any other options that the world tells us that you're going to go to some place for just a short period of time and then you can one day graduate to heaven. You're not going to get your own little kingdom with lots of people to judge for yourself, as another group tells us. You're not going to come back on this planet as some sort of reincarnated creature. You are either going to be welcomed into God's presence or you are going to be rejected from God's presence. And if you find yourself in this boat, if you're saying right now in your heart, I don't know, if I were to stand before God right now, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be welcomed in. I don't know where I stand with Christ. Then I plead with you to call out to God for mercy now. And turn from your sin and embrace Christ Jesus as your Savior and your Lord, believing in his perfect life and his sacrificial death and his glorious resurrection are sufficient to eradicate your sin problem and to bring you new life. Throw yourself at the mercy of Jesus Christ and plead your case to him that you need a Savior. And friend, he will save you. You turn from this world. You turn from yourself, from your sin. And you come clinging to Christ and his cross. And one day, when your body shuts down and you stand in the presence of God, you will be welcomed into his presence for all of eternity. It's the promise he's made to us in his word. Friend, Solomon is abundantly clear here. Remember God before you meet him as judge. Remember God before you meet him as judge. Friends, rejoice. Rejoice in this life that you have been given as a gift. And remember your Creator, the one who gave you this life as a gift. And remember this one that gave you this life as a gift is also your final judge. Find great hope in him. Find great joy in him. Worship him. Live this life to the fullest, honoring and pleasing him with everything that you've got and enjoying the gift that he's given you. Let's pray together. Lord, thank you for our time and your word. Thank you for the clarity that Solomon brings. Thank you for the reminder that this is to us to rejoice in this life that you have given us as a gift and to remember our Creator who we stand accountable to. Lord, remind us of these things. Cause these truths to permeate our hearts and our lives. For the glory of Christ, give us great joy as we meditate on these things. And continue to fill us with the Spirit and enable us to live lives that please you. In the name of Christ, I pray.